Welcome to PR After Hours, your twice weekly cocktail of business, PR, and marketing tips hosted by me, Alex Greenwood. Every week, we bring you virtual happy hours featuring business advice from entrepreneurs and leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. We're going to get started in just a moment, so stick with us. Okay, who has a podcast then writes an ebook about podcasting and doesn't do an audiobook version of it? Well, not me. I've done that. In fact, I'm very excited to tell you, dear listeners, that the podcast option, my recent top-selling ebook on podcasting, my journey through 15 years as a podcaster, broadcaster, host, guest, and observer, is now an Audible audiobook. It's really, really, really exciting for me to be able to present this to you through Audible, which is available on Amazon.com, where the ebook link is as well. And in this fast listen, my experience comes to you through stories, practical tips, and advice from my hundreds of hours as a guest, producer, podcast host, and more. And the podcast option, if I say so myself, is mandatory listening for those new to podcasting, and it should be a welcome addition to veteran podcasters' library. So check out the podcast option read by yours truly, Alex Greenwood, or as they say there, J. Alexander Greenwood, because that's my pen name, and that's a long story, which if you dig through my podcast, eventually you'll find out what that means. But the point being today, the podcast option is available now as an Audible audiobook. I've got a link in the show notes to make it easy for you. Please do me a favor, go get that audiobook, or if audiobooks aren't your bag, there's also a link for you to get it as an ebook. Again, the podcast option. I certainly hope you will choose it. You know, it's kind of an old saw that communicators express to people we want to be our clients, is, which is we help you tell your story. But, you know, it's not a cliche, but it's kind of something you hear a lot. And there's a reason why. It's because that's what we do. We're good at this. I often tell my clients that I help you see around corners. I help you anticipate potential crises. But the thing I do best is I help you package up what's unique and interesting about you and present it to the media, to the general public, through social media, through whatever channels we can do. And that's why I'm always excited to have people who have totally taken it to the next level here in the virtual lounge of PR After Hours. And that's why we're so pleased to welcome Ira Gostin. He's an entrepreneur, marketing and communication strategist specializing in corporate storytelling to help founders and CEOs grow their companies, both public and private. He is the chief strategist at G8 Strategies with a headquarters in Reno, Nevada, and an office in New York City. Ira, welcome to the virtual lounge.
Hey, Alex. Great to be here.
I did some reading up on you. You started your career as a photographer for the Associated Press.
I did. I actually, even before that, I worked for a little weekly newspaper in the East Bay area of the San Francisco Bay Area. And I used to ride my bicycle to photo assignments. And it was a little twice weekly newspaper. And I had my little hard case strapped to my handlebars. And that's where my storytelling career started when I was 15 years old.
The reason why I pulled that nugget out is because I think that someone with a photographer's eye has a natural ability, in my opinion, to frame a story without even using words, because you're using a photo, you're using an image. And if you can put those things together with a facility with language, you're ahead of the pack. And I suspect that's why you've been so successful.
It definitely, there is that visual element, but sometimes it's kind of a curse. When I went to grad school, being so visual, and of course, my undergrad being in journalism, you know, didn't take math classes or business classes or anything else. So to learn how to use Excel took me a while to get there, but I've somehow made peace with it and found a way to use that visual element of the planning to then help clients craft stories to tell their story and voice.
You've been rather successful at this. Are you doing a lot of work, as we mentioned in the intro, in investor relations? Can you tell me the difference? I think I have a good idea, but let's tell the listeners a little bit who may not understand that, because a good deal of our listeners are small business owners, but they're not publicly traded. But what is the difference between investor relations, public relations work, and more typical stuff?
So, you know, investor relations is basically financial communications. There are different rules and laws. And, you know, think about when you hear on the news, Apple released their quarterly earnings and exceeded analysts' expectations. That is investor relations. The Apple investor relations team has spoken to their analysts, given them information on a regular basis that's public information, and then those analysts they create these expectations of what a company should or shouldn't do, and then they either meet or, you know, don't meet them. So that's really the IR, is engaging with shareholders, making sure that there's a certain CEO who has had his hands slapped by the SEC for tweeting things that maybe he shouldn't have, and that's part of IR. And I'm pretty sure that the IR team was doing a big head slap when that tweet came out. But so you help the company follow a communications path. Public relations is sort of everything, and it's communications, it's strategic communications, it's customer service. I find that customer service falls under PR because, you know, who is the best PR person that you have, but your first contact, if you're a retail store, the person at the counter is your first PR person. And a lot of times that gets ignored. So, and then, you know, there's marketing, and marketing is the absolute big umbrella. There's digital marketing and social media marketing, and all of those things really intertwine because it all starts with the written word and the voice of the company trying to tell its story. And that's kind of where we work, right in that little intersection there.
Any advice for Elon Musk's IR people?
Patience. I love reading about the man, and he is our current, you know, day Thomas Edison, Henry Ford. And if you're an entrepreneur, you have to follow those things, because being an entrepreneur is not taking no for an answer and taking risks and sticking it all out there. And that's Elon Musk. So just be ready with a statement when you need to have it.
Yeah, well, I hope he doesn't get in trouble with the SEC for some of this stuff, but that's another subject. I would love to ask you, Ira, about the onboarding process, if I could, because we're talking about storytelling. Now, quick on my process, I annoy a lot of new clients because they're excited and ready to go, but I ask them so many questions. You tell me if that's what you do, but I ask them a ton of questions, and I sometimes it becomes circuitous, and then, you know, and I get these questionnaires because I want to know everything, because what I'm doing, I'm waiting for my ears to prick up and go, there we go. That's the unique aspect. Tell me about your onboarding process.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And I even go as far, and this ruffles some feathers, and we have to have a conversation about it. But I ask for financial information. And because when, you know, in public relations or IR or marketing, you know, you've got to prove your value. And the only way that you can do that is creating key performance indicators. Yep. So that you can go back every quarter, go back and look and say, okay, are we moving the needle? That is the goal in marketing, move the needle. It's not anything else at the end of the day. So if the company won't give you their starting point financials, how can you tell if, you know, getting a client on the morning show or, some big, you know, news show or CNBC is great, but if there's not metrics, if they haven't doubled their web traffic or if revenue hasn't gone up or the pipeline hasn't filled, those are things that you have to have that conversation about. And money's always an awkward conversation, but I really try to help them understand, look, this allows me to really pinpoint the work that we need to do and how do we get you there? And are your goals smart? You know, are they realistic? Are they attainable? And then we can create a campaign to really get them to where they want to go and move that needle.
Do you offer to sign an NDA? Does that make it help? Does that help?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we, our contract actually has a NDA built into it. You know, we do, our onboarding process is the proposal. Once they accept the proposal, we do a letter of agreement. Then we create a scope that gets us contracted, and then we build a strategy. So the scope doesn't have all the specifics in it, but because I can't get the specifics until we have those onboarding meetings, and you know, I get my whiteboard and my sticky notes and the team around, and we start writing stuff down, and ultimately we want to get to that value proposition. What makes this company special and unique? And it's exactly what you said. What's that little nugget that is some really cool thing that we can say, wow, here's where the story starts, or we build the story around this little nugget. And you know, I predominantly work in the industrial sector now. So precious metal mining, manufacturing, support companies. And it's an interesting process because it's not really sexy and flashy, but we're you know, we get to that point where we really create some fun campaigns for our clients.
Yeah, I was getting ready to use the S word. I was going to say there, I've worked with Fortune 1000 manufacturers myself, and there's very little sexy about it. So that kind of leads me to my next question, which I think I know the answer, but I'm going to hit you with it anyways. Like, have you ever got somebody signed and then you got to know them better and went, oh, crap, there's not much here.
Yeah, absolutely. And then it becomes a little bit more traditional PR campaign. But I'm not really a patient person. That P word is a dirty word in my vocabulary. But I've had to become patient. And so I love it when a prospective client wants to have multiple conversations because they're interviewing me and I'm interviewing them. And if my gut says, I don't think we can move the needle here, or we get a lot of pushback at every turn, like, you know, as we're just chatting, they're pushing back. No, we don't do that. We don't do that. This is the way we've always done it.
Yeah.
Ooh. This is the way we've always done it. I'm not making this up. I was driving up the San Diego freeway from Long Beach to Los Angeles, and there was a muffler shop up on the freeway, and it had this sign, and it was those plastic letters like at the drive-in where some guy with a little handled suction cup thing was sticking them up there, and it said the most dangerous phrase in the English language, that's not the way we've always done it. And it has always stuck with me because it is absolutely a killer. And if that's what they want, it's not what they're going to get from me, because we're going to turn everything upside down and kick it in the rear end.
You know, I am so glad that I got you here, because this is something that I've really wanted to speak to somebody who has a lot of IR experience about. And when I was working with said Fortune 1000 manufacturer, I'm not going to say a name, obviously, or the industry, but it became very evident to me after working with them for about a year that they were just, and maybe this is everybody, you tell me, publicly traded, everything they did was just quarter to quarter earnings.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny because there's company, you know, when you're watching the news and you see a company has, you know, gone private, right? You know, they've gone, made a deal with a private equity company, and they've delisted themselves. And there is a tendency, and there are certainly a lot of companies across sectors that start to run their business for shareholder expectations.
Yeah.
Not optimization, not profits, not return, just to meet expectations. And I personally don't think that it's a huge percentage. I think they're out there, and you take some work to get to them. And I feel sorry for the IR teams, because they're basically putting out the same material every quarter. But there are a lot of really cool publicly traded companies that truly, truly believe that their purpose is to bring value to their shareholders.
Right.
And, you know, those are pretty cool companies, and they're all different sizes. And I love reading stories about them.
Let me ask you about working with CEOs. I've been doing this 27 years. I've either as an agency for it'll be almost 12 on my own, but I've been kind of the right arm to college presidents, CEOs of healthcare management companies, different things like that. It was a natural fit because they needed the PR guy, you know, at their side, and I write speeches for them, that kind of thing. Is there in your mind, and I'm not asking you to say anything that could get you in trouble with a client, but is there, to your mind, is there a CEO mindset that you see more often than not in, when it comes to the relationship between that CEO and what you do?
I think a great CEO is someone that really understands what their close team brings to their table. Mm-hmm. For me, I love working with CEOs that have a great sense of humor,
yeah.
that appreciate the fact that their job is all about telling the story. And when I say, hey, we need to rehearse, they're like, okay, not, I got it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, famous last words.
Always wanting to make it a little better. But truly, I worked as an employee for a mining company, and I had the luxury of working for two great CEOs, very, very different people. But they were both focused on their team and the shareholders, and doing the best job that they could in their role. And that doesn't mean that we didn't disagree and go toe to toe and have arguments. But at the end of the day, they knew their role was to bring shareholder value, and they appreciate that responsibility. And that's a good CEO.
Do you do any aspects of crisis communication with your clients, or do you hire that out?
Yeah, so I don't. I worked for a mining company, and we had a situation, and I was being interviewed by a reporter in another country, and I said something I probably shouldn't have said that had a word that begins with F in it. And,
oh, my.
And they quoted me verbatim. And I was like, okay. And the CEO popped his head in the door and goes, we probably shouldn't cuss at the reporters. thumbs up. Got it. And it was a stupid question. And I dealt with it as such, and I got smacked for it. So I don't on a daily basis. I've got a really good friend and a couple other people that, if I need to bring them in, I will. I feel that there is some expertise to that, and I don't claim to be an expert in that at all. So, it's like, okay, let's bring somebody in that does this every day.
Right. A good chunk of my practice is planning, crisis-com planning. I'll do active crisis here and there, but I don't know. As I said to my colleagues, oh, I'm getting too old. Seriously, it always hit on a holiday weekend, and I was like, I just worked a whole holiday weekend, 4th of July, 14-hour days, not for a crisis, but it was for an air show. I was helping out with that, with PR, and it just reminded me that I don't want to stand out on a runway in the heat 14 hours a day, facilitating media relations, So that's why I feel about crisis, too. But what I do love about crisis is the act of planning, helping organizations be ready.
Which is a great place to be, because they definitely need that, and I've got a manufacturing client that's at the early stages, and it's something we've talked about that, when they start shipping product, it's like they're going to have that plan in place, because there's always going to be something that comes up. So, you're going to have to come out to Reno and visit, because, we have these great Reno air races out here. It is an amazing air show. So,
how far is Reno from Vegas?
Well, it's a 45-minute flight, but a very long 7-hour drive.
I was going to say, I'm going to a conference for a client in Vegas in the great balmy month of August. I thought, well, maybe I could just pop over to Reno, but I guess not. Well, I have to do that. I want to see that. The reason I bring up crisis besides the fact that it's something I enjoy, the planning aspects of in particular, is because you're working on storytelling, but there's the same process to onboard and learn about a crisis planning because you're asking all these questions. But one of the things I love to do is the black swan exercise, where we just try to get them to think blue sky. What's the craziest thing? And my example is always like, you know, in Ghostbusters.
What is it? It can't be.
What did you do, Ray?
Oh, shit.
It's the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. Something I loved from my childhood. Something that could never, ever possibly destroy us. Mr. Stay Puffed.
Nice thinking, Ray.
We used to roast Stay Puffed Marshmallows by the fire at Camp Wakanda.
Ray has gone bye-bye, Egon. What have you got left?
Sorry, Beckman. I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought.
When at the end they're like, clear your minds, don't think of anything that could hurt us, and Ray of course thinks of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Nobody expects the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and right, so that's what we do with the client, and they love it. And what I found, the byproduct of that though, is that they've taken a different look. They've taken the way they look at their business from a different angle, and it often helps with marketing.
You know, and that's a really good comment and a key to you know, marketing as a whole, but really public relations, is getting our clients to think differently. They, you know, ultimately they've been doing things the same way and the same thought process. And that's why they brought us in. And you know, only 25% of them are going to go, I should talk to somebody in PR. And then a lesser amount are actually going to pull the trigger and hire somebody. And it's, if we can help them look at things from a different perspective, that's doing our job, because now we're creating opportunity to tell the story better, tell the story differently, be more effective, identify stakeholders that they hadn't identified yet. All of those things are really about, and you know, think differently. That would be a great ad campaign.
I like that. I wonder. Yeah. You know, it's, I love what you say on your website. You know, communications is the voice of business success. And tell us a little bit about G8. Is this a relatively new thing you've done, or a rebrand, or what's going on with that?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of a rebrand. I had, after I left the mining company that I worked for, I had built an agency, and we did a little bit of mining. We also did some hospitality. I had a celebrity chef. We were kind of all over the place, and we were having a blast. And there was an opportunity to kind of pull that in with a much larger agency. Ironically, I interned there when I was in grad school at 40-something. I guess I was an extern at that point. And, you know, they're KPS3 in Reno. They're a regional agency, full-service agency, wonderful, creative people. And I went to go work there for just about a year. And I just sort of realized that I really missed being out on my own. And so I went out on my own, and I just wasn't even sure what I was going to do. And so I, apparently the whole world had some pandemic or something going on last year. had 5 knee surgeries. So kind of slow to getting my business going, and so we kind of launched it as just a consultancy, and then had a couple opportunities for some, pick up some nice clients. And so just a few months ago, we rebranded into G8 Strategies and pulled this team together. So it's, you know, we're not new, but we're kind of new and still a little shiny. And we really just stick in our lane of industrial clients. And I'm really happy with that. And it's going very well.
Well, you know, it's pretty evident you love what you do, and the people you work with love you. I mean, there's on your bio page, I won't embarrass you by reading them all, but there's a very long list of accolades. Well, I'll read one or two here. I mean, 2021, 2022 Communications Strategist of the Year, Communications Awards winner, Bulldog PR Awards, Best Investor Relations for this year. I mean, you must really... I mean, it sounds silly to say that, but I think you must really love what you do. I don't think people win all those awards if they're just clocking in and out, you know?
Yeah, you know, I always assumed that I was going to be working for the Associated Press my whole life. And, you know, that I was going to be one of those guys that, you know, went face first into the fixer in the dark room. And, you know, at 80 years old, and suddenly they took the darkroom away. And right. Journalism changed. And I saw, you know, with digital coming on board, and it just, things were changing. And I, for a while there at the end of my news career, I was doing a lot of annual reports. And so I was working with CFOs and the IR team. And that's kind of where that little thing clicked. And I was like, what do I need to do to change careers and start this marketing path? And so I decided to get my MBA, and I was, half of my professors were younger than me. And I had a blast with it, and I was a marketing coordinator, and then a marketing and sales manager, and then a marketing director, and kind of worked my way up, and then found this opportunity to become a founder of a company that was going to go public, and got to do an IPO, and I rang the bell on the New York Stock Exchange.
Wow.
And, you know, these amazing experience and working for a multinational company in multiple countries, I just ate it all up. And I fell in love with the mining space. And, you know, again, journalism majors, we didn't take classes that ended in ology ever. You know, and so learning the mining space and the industrial space, and I really do love it, and I have fun with it. So it's you know, being self-employed and being an entrepreneur, as you know, you have those days where you're on top of the world, and 3 days later you're like, oh my God, I hate this, I gotta get my resume out, I gotta go find a job. And then the phone rings, and then it's like, oh, this is the best thing in the whole world. And then tomorrow it's like, oh, my life sucks. And you manage it, and you just keep smiling and push through it and have fun. And when I have fun, my clients get good results. So,
man, I think your clients are very lucky to have you. You really do. And I totally understand all those emotions you just described. I go through them all in about a span of about an hour every day. You know what? I'll just tell you as anecdotally real quick here. During lockdown, I experienced quite the slowdown. Clients just get spooked, and they PR is often the first to go. I mean, you know this. Yeah. Despite, even if we do a great job, they're like, we love you, but, and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, 11 years has been a good run on my own. Maybe I need to get back. And I interviewed at a few agencies and some stuff like that. And it didn't happen, and I'm kind of relieved it didn't, because now the phone won't stop ringing again. You know, I caught up, but I panicked for a while there, and I started throwing the resumes out, you know, but I don't think there's any shame in that, but I'm glad it didn't work out.
Being an entrepreneur, and there's a program through the State Department called the Mandela Washington Fellowship Program, and it's young entrepreneurs from Africa. And so I have a mentee from Africa. And so we were on a Zoom call and are getting to know each other. And she was kind of telling me some of this stuff. And I'm like, okay, you are an entrepreneur. All that stuff that you just described, I go through every month. You do? And it's like, we all do. And it's like, it's okay. Just give all those characters names. When that voice starts telling you something, give that persona a name and then tell it to shut up. And keep going forward and keep pushing yourself. And she was so relieved to know she wasn't alone. And I right. think that's one of the cool things about entrepreneurship is you either have it or you don't. And that's okay if you don't, but don't try to go out on your own, because you're going to hate it.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that's one reason I do this show is because I have an interview with somebody like yourself who lifts me up and makes it reminds me I'm not alone. And there's a great collection of folks like you and me out there, and we should all, you know, every now and then check in with each other. And Ira, I want to thank you, Ira Gostin. Thank you for checking in here at the Virtual Lounge. It's g8strategies.com, folks. Go to praafterhours.com, and there'll be links in the show notes. There'll be a great picture of Ira. There'll be all this stuff you can find, and of course, you'll find the complete archive of our shows. Ira, any parting words as you go back into the cool Reno sunset here?
Tell your story. Whatever you do for your marketing, tell your story. Go back and listen to Alex's podcast because there's some gems and stuff in there. So thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
I'll slip you that fiver later.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Angelo Ponzi, the host of the Business Growth Cafe podcast, and you're listening to PR After Hours.
Oh, you know what that means? Looks like it's last call here at your virtual lounge for PR news, views, and interviews. We'll keep it short and sweet. Just remind you, if you like the show, there's many ways you can help us keep it going, not the least among which is to rate this podcast. Simply go to the show notes at prafterhours.com or wherever you're getting this podcast and click on the link. ratethispodcast.com/after, and it will take you to Apple Podcasts and a couple other places very easily. One click, you write your review, it's done. Can't tell you enough how important it is to get ratings on those sites so that we can build our audience and keep bringing you the kind of information you need every week for your business. Also, don't forget, if you want to sponsor the show, give us a tip in the virtual tip jar or ask a question. There are links in the show notes. Well, I think it's time that I cleaned up and closed up for this edition of PR After Hours here on Anchor FM.